J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
My mother said men aren't men until they can find their way to Sears by themselves. That's my store, Sears. Past all that Kenmore stuff, come on. Right to that Craftsman tool department. I walk in there and my nipples are rock hard. They're beautiful. I can buy stuff I don't even need now. Yeah. I got a gear puller. I got no idea what that thing is. Oh, yeah. But it looks good on my pegboard. But that some assembly required or hurt you or a loved one. My mom gave me a gas grill for my birthday. I got the Sunbeam 3300. Oh, yeah. It's got rotisserie, dual burner, fold-down redwood serving areas. Looks like a car bomb in that crate, though. Butane hoses and tanks and fittings. I took a shot at it. Looked pretty good. Ever finish something, but you still got a bag of real important-looking parts left over? Hey, honey, why don't you try the grill out first? You should have seen the flame come out of that hood. Honey, stop running around like that. You're just making those flames grow on you like that. You didn't burn that meat, did you? This must be a fuel regulator of some sort. I don't think it's supposed to spray in the hair like that. Guess I don't need to tell you, though, do I, hon? Women are always mad. Burn her head, she's always mad at me. Always getting stuff dirty. I just washed that floor. Look what you did. Why don't you wash the floor for once? I pull out the hose. What's so tough about that? Everywhere you go, you make the house dirty. Oh, yeah. That's how I mark territory.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
What? Kim Kardashian failed her baby bar exam? How's the poor thing going to support herself now? Hi, kids. It's the 27th of May, 2021, and this is going to be our last podcast until next Tuesday. I'm going to take the weekend off and sort of enjoy it, and I hope you are able to do the same thing. That Tim Allen thing is so funny. That was the thing that put him on the map. And it is true, people are going to be doing the barbecue thing. I had a choice of either playing that or playing the Eddie Murphy thing from the Delirious concert when he was talking about grilling. Oh, my God, that was so funny, too. But I played that for you. Try to keep it upbeat here today. At some point over the weekend, might not be a bad idea if you just take a moment to remember the real reason that we are celebrating or commemorating, as the case may be, our fallen soldiers. Last couple of years, it has been nice to watch on Memorial Day people posting pictures of their fathers and uncles and grandfathers and even moms in some cases, and brothers and sisters for that matter, who are serving right now. That's always nice. Put up your flag, throw some burgers on the grill, pools are going to be opening up. And in the Midwest, that's bad news because it's going to get real cold. First of all, today, for those of you listening in the St. Louis area, we got trouble. We got trouble right here in River City with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for tornadoes. I'm riffing here. So there's going to be two rounds of storms. The first one's going to hit around midday, 10, 11 o'clock, something like that. And then things will calm down a little bit. And then late this afternoon, that's the problem. The one late this afternoon and into this evening might not be a bad idea to stay on your toes. And then after that, temperatures for the high on, tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday, not getting out of the 60s, which means overnight lows are going to be low 50s, maybe even some scattered upper 40s. Not exactly pool weather, is it? On this date, 1984, I officially completed my move to St. Louis. I had already gotten an apartment. I had already taken delivery of all of my stuff. I moved here from Buffalo, and they delivered all my furniture. Boy, did I have a lot of cheap crap, too. And I had to fly to Chicago because I had driven my cat from Buffalo to Chicago. But because things were going to be in such a state of flux, I left the cat in Chicago, and then I drove to Chicago, and then I flew back. My cat was in the carrier hold, and then I landed at Lambert International Airport. No cat. This is a Sunday night. I'm walking around all over the airport looking for somebody who can tell me where my goddamn cat is. It's only a 43-minute flight. How the hell do they lose the cat in 43 minutes? I'm walking all over the airport. I'm asking people. Nobody has any idea. Nobody's got any idea where my damn cat is. I'm walking around all over the airport. And in the main terminal, just sort of across an aisle from the main baggage carousel, there used to be, it's not there anymore, there used to be a conveyor belt. And I'm walking by, there's the cat carrier, there's the cat inside. And I just picked up the carrier and walked out to my car and took the cat home. You know, anybody could have come along and just grabbed the cat. Not that there's a lot of cat burglars walking around St. Louis. I'd only been with the station a couple of days, and a weekend was coming up. The holiday weekend was coming up, and the guys at the radio station said, hey, we heard that you play softball pretty well. We're going to be playing a game this weekend, and you want to play? I'm like, sure. Where do I go? He goes, well, we'll pick you up. I come to find out that somehow somebody made an arrangement for us to play in prison out in Pacific. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So we're going to be playing prisoners? Yeah. A lot of them listen to the radio station. They send us letters all the time. They asked us to bring out the KC softball team to play the prisoners. I'm like, I've never done anything like this before. So we go in, you know, they do a complete search of us when we come in. And I'm thinking to myself, we're bringing in baseball bats. Prisoners, you know, in a lot of movies I've seen like to take baseball bats and kill people with them. But the guys were actually very, very nice. A lot of them were in for not very serious crimes. We played three softball games that afternoon. And I think it was between game two and three is when they the prisoners had a band. And for whatever reason, it was very, very extremely important for us to break between game two and three and go hear this band playing in the little pavilion that they had. So we accommodated them. After all, they are prisoners and they could kill us. So why are we going to get into a disagreement with them, right? We pretty much did whatever they asked us to do. So we go over there and we're having a couple of soft drinks and the band starts playing. Once all of us got into this pavilion and sat down, the lead singer of this band, again, this is all prisoners, you can sort of see his eyes looking like, is everybody here? Is everybody here? Okay, is everybody here? All right, good. They break into an Ozzy Osbourne song. The guy, the lead singer, I swear to God, I'm telling you the truth here. And if you don't believe me, ask any of the old guys from Keisha. Ask John Hewlett, whatever the case may be, because he was there too. This prisoner pulls a giant bullfrog out of his pocket and bites the head of the bullfrog off and spits it out into the audience, which of course was us. Oh, yes. And by the way, we didn't dare win any of the three softball games. We just didn't think it was a good idea. The final Larry Sanders Show aired on this date in 1998, only the best television show in the history of the medium. If you are traveling this weekend, be aware of the fact that AAA is saying that travel is going to be up 60% compared to last year. Of course, last year we were at the very beginning of the pandemic, and so nobody was going anywhere. So 60% might be slightly misleading. Another mass shooting yesterday. 15 mass shootings in the last week. 61 for the year, and it's not even June yet. 61 mass shootings in this country. The much-anticipated Friends reunion finally hits at 12:01 overnight. Also happens to be the wedding anniversary of Lisa Kudrow, married some guy 26 years ago today in 1995 named Michael Stern. She remained a virgin until her wedding day. She was 31. He's one of those people that believes virginity is a special gift a woman gives to her husband. If you're 31 and you still haven't had sex, you're a sociopath. But she was very nice to talk to on the phone.
I want to go back to 2004. In that first month or two after Friends went off the air. And you had this regimen, you had this schedule, you had this whole thing that you were used to doing, and all of a sudden it wasn't there anymore. Can you sort of take me back to 2004 and what that first month or two was like for you?
Well, sure. We finished shooting in January, and in around March, I started working on a movie. So that was fine. And then I started, right when I was done with that, working on a new series for HBO. So I was busy.
So the fact that you were busy was enough of a distraction from the regimen that you had had doing the series for 10 years.
Right. And thank God, because I do love scheduling regimen. I love that. The hard part was after the comeback, which was the HBO show, after we stopped doing that, that's what was hard, because there was no schedule. And guess what? Now I'm fine with it.
Because when you're sitting there on the couch and you realize you've been watching Montel for the last 20 minutes in sort of a mindless fashion, you know you better get your ass up off the couch and go do something, right?
No, I didn't do that. Because we did have a production company, so I was required to actually attend meetings and do some work.
One of the things that people will recall from the days on Friends is that you guys, as a cast, hung together in terms of negotiating your salaries and stuff like that. How right. difficult was that? Was there any dissension? Anybody who thought maybe that wasn't such a good idea? Did it all shake out okay?
It all shook out fine. And, you know, that is a challenge because it's not, you know, the six of us were actually very solid. But it was unprecedented. And I think the deal makers from all sides were nervous, you know, because it had never been done before. So I think everyone was ready for one of us to cave and pick us apart. And, you know, that wasn't going to happen. So it took a while for us to convince our people that that wasn't going to happen.
This might be, in the history of television, one of the most well-adjusted casts ever put together. I mean, people keep looking for some sort of, some sort of black mark on the Friends story and everything, and it really doesn't look like they're ever going to find one.
No, we really did get along. We really were extremely supportive of each other. You know, I think there was something very mature. I was the older, you know, cast member.
Yeah.
But, I think everyone, even in their 20s, you know, Jennifer and Matthew, really understood what this meant for us in terms of our futures, too. The life or death of this show depends on us all getting along and it running smoothly, and we are friends, and that's what the world has to see when they turn on their TV and having a good time. So that's what we did.
And now, people just scrambling around, do we have HBO Max? Because that's where you're going to have to go to watch this thing. For St. Louis Cardinal baseball fans listening here this morning, it's almost a shame that yesterday's game between the Cardinals and Tony La Russa's White Sox was on during the afternoon, because you missed a very pivotal moment in this year's baseball season. And the reason I say that is because I think Mike Schilt is going to get fined by Major League Baseball. Now, you get an automatic fine if you are thrown out of the game, and he was thrown out of the game in the seventh inning on a Wednesday afternoon, because he's doing a pitching change, bringing in Giovanni Gallegos. And Joe West, you know, the umpire who's retiring, they make a big deal out of it. I don't understand that at all. Okay, he's been an umpire for like 45 years, but he's also been a pain in the ass for 45 years. Nobody, it's like they say, nobody has ever purchased a ticket for a ball game to watch the umpires. Joe West doesn't seem to understand that. And so yesterday, Gallegos has got a little spot on the brim of his baseball. Now, remember Steve Kline? Steve Kline wore the same hat for the Cardinals. He wore that same hat for like four straight seasons. They even did a giveaway night where they gave away a dirty hat to everybody, to the first 30,000 fans. The only problem is that in recent years, this whole thing started with Kenny Rogers and the series between the Cardinals and the Detroit Tigers back in the day. And it was a cold night, and Kenny Rogers had some goop all over his wrist, and he kept touching that hole. Now, Andy Van Slyke and I had a very long conversation about that at Brio a couple of years back, and he said, look, the players, and we're talking about the hitters here, actually don't complain, especially in cold weather, when a pitcher has a substance on his person and he's using that to grip the ball, because you're throwing a ball 99 miles an hour, you don't want to get hit in the head. And when your fingers get cold, you sort of lose control of the ball. And so it's sort of like this dirty little secret everybody in Major League Baseball knows, that guys are doctoring up the ball. The problem is, when it's sunny and 85 degrees like it was yesterday in Chicago at the old Comiskey Park, which they've changed the name of so many times, I don't even remember what the place is called anymore. U.S. Cellular is what it was the last time I cared. So anyhow, they bring in Giovanni Gallegos yesterday, and Joe West makes him change his hat. Mike Schilt comes running out of the dugout going, what are you talking to my pitcher for? You got no right to be standing out there talking to my pitcher. He is immediately thrown out of the game for saying the F word. But Schilt makes a very, very interesting, legitimate point, which I'm afraid is still going to end up getting him in trouble.
Gio wears the same hat all year. Hats accrue dirt. Hats accrue substances, you know, like just stuff, you know. We pitched in a day game. Did Gio have some sunscreen at some point in his career to make sure he doesn't get some kind of melanoma? Possibly. Does he use rosin to help out? Possibly. Are these things that baseball really wants to crack down on? No, it's not. I know that completely firsthand from the commissioner's office. And Major League Baseball's got a very, very, very tough position here, because there are people that are effectively not even trying to hide, essentially flipping the bird at the league with how they're cheating in this game with concocted substances. There are players that have been monetized for it. There are players that are obviously doing it, going to their glove. There's clear video of it. You can tell the pitchers that are doing it because they don't want to go to their mouth, which Gio does off the rubber. Major League Baseball is trying their best to do it in a manner that doesn't create any black eye for the integrity of the game that we love. But speaking of integrity, how about the integrity of the guys that are doing it clean? How about the guys that are pitching their tails off in Major League Baseball and doing it clean, that have an unfair competitive advantage for the guys that are clearly loading up with concoctions that they actually advertise, don't do anything to hide, even in plain view? That's the guys I'm speaking for. I'm speaking up for the hitters that have a living to make facing stuff that's already really, really good. And you can see, based on spin rates, how guys' careers are jumping off the charts. And then you can do cause and effect. But why don't you start with the guys that are cheating with some stuff that are really impacting the game and impacting how people play this game?
Schilt is 100% right. And unfortunately, in this culture, when you're 100% right and you have exposed a dirty little secret, in this case about Major League Baseball, you usually get in trouble. Trust me, I know something about this. So let's wait and see how the whole thing totally shakes out. Well, given the fact we have the Memorial Day holiday over the next couple of days, a lot of people get very patriotic and stuff. Obviously, put out your flag. Mine's already out. And it's sort of like almost like a lot of the same things that happen around the 4th of July. A lot of parades and patriotism and flags and stuff like that. While all that is going on, yesterday we learned that the former president of the United States is probably going to get indicted. Keep in mind that when they do what they did the other day and announce that the president is being investigated by the grand jury, it usually means, not always, but usually means that they already got you. And the grand jury is completely different than a jury in a normal case. The grand jury has 23 members, and all you need is a majority. So all you need is 12 to end up with a recommendation for an indictment. And you don't have to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt. All you have to do is prove probable cause, which is a lot easier. Now, usually they say these things take about 6 months, which would put it around, I don't know, Thanksgiving or something like that. But I did read a couple of things yesterday that said, don't believe that in this particular case. We think it's going to happen a lot faster. And regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on politically, you do have to wonder how this looks to the rest of the world. We also found out yesterday that apparently things that are not supposed to happen were happening during the Trump administration, including something that hits very, very close to home. The old Monsanto, which of course now is Bayer, they've been having a lot of bad publicity for their herbicide. Roundup, I guess it is. And Roundup, if you read about it, it certainly does the job, but it also produces a lot of, I guess you would say, side effects that are not good, and there's lawsuits flying around all over the place. And EPA is not supposed to be a politically charged department of the federal government. And we found out yesterday that the Trump administration really leaned hard on EPA to lift some restrictions on Bayer and this herbicide. Not supposed to happen. They're not supposed to do that. So a lot of things in this country that have been happening the last couple of years that aren't supposed to happen. And it reminded me very much yesterday of the opening scene from the cable series starring Jeff Daniels called The Newsroom. And some great writing by Aaron Sorkin.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom?
Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl,
just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period generation period ever period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the f*** you're talking about.
Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars. Acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore.
By the way, just as a preemptive strike here, for people who think that somehow JC's playing anti-American stuff, no, not at all. Do you have a member of your family? Well, this is a rhetorical question. Do you have a member of your family that's a fuck-up? Maybe a member of your immediate family, maybe it's a cousin, a distant relative, something like that. Every family has got, I got a couple, but I got one in specifically that I'm thinking of, fucked up his whole life. Okay, we don't hate him. We hope that he gets his shit together. Same thing with the United States of America. It's not very patriotic to have things happening in the country that you vehemently disagree with and do nothing about it and say nothing about it. It's the same thing as it is with a family member. You still love them. You hope that they change. And if you find an opportunity to help the person change, you use that opportunity. Same thing with the love of country. Because you're critical of your government does not mean that you hate it. But a lot of it is just, you know, people aren't having discussions anymore. They're just not having discussions anymore. All they want to do is put up points on the board for their side. And as long as we have that going on, we're going nowhere fast. Which brings us to the idea of the greatest generation, the term coined by Tom Brokaw of NBC News. I was sort of stuck in the middle here trying to figure out which one of these interviews do I play back for you here over the Memorial Day holiday, because in 1998, a movie directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Hanks, Saving Private Ryan, was released. Now, I had interviewed Tom Hanks three or four times before, but this one was really, really different. We had actually seen the movie in Los Angeles a month earlier. And we had a lot of time to sort of think about it, especially that opening 20 minutes. But because of some scheduling difficulties, instead of us seeing the movie in LA and then immediately doing the interviews the next day, they had us all fly to Chicago about a month later and interview Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks. He's our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day.
Circumstances leading to his death.
Felt his loss tremendous.
Robert's commanding officer.
His heroic service to his country.
A great soldier.
Dedicated friend.
The grace of God and the aid of your
those
son,
of us
I'm alive.
Please accept my most sincere condolences.
He will live in our memories.
To you, my deepest sympathy.
Colonel, I've got something you should know about.
Yes?
These two men died in Normandy. This one in Omaha Beach.
Sean Ryan.
This one in Utah.
Peter Ryan.
This man was killed last week in New Guinea.
Daniel Ryan.
The three men are brothers, sir. I've just learned that this afternoon their mother's getting all three telegrams. That's not all. There's a fourth brother, the youngest. He's somewhere in Normandy. We don't know where.
That boy's alive. We're going to send somebody to find him. And we're going to get him the hell out of there.
Some private in the 101st lost three of his brothers, and he's got a ticket home.
It's not going to be easy to find one particular soldier in the whole damn war.
And here we are with Tom Hanks. Well, I'm not going to start talking about you. I'm going to start talking about Steven. You know, I can't really imagine a lot of other directors being able to pull this off. I've heard stories about him arriving on the set in the midst of total chaos and being able to just walk in, assess the situation, and get what he wanted out of the scene. Just talk to me about working with this guy.
Well, it's pretty accurate. Can't keep up with him. Can't imagine where he gets this instinctual drive from. Cannot fathom how a human being can walk onto the set, watch what the scene is, and say, okay, bang here with an 85, we're going to come around here, put it on a Western Dolly, I'm going to put it on a Styx right here, Mitch, have this on your camera, then I'm going to have a loose 50, but I want you to get, you know, this is the way he talks, this is the way he thinks, and he does it all without censoring himself for a single moment. It's all this kind of like, and see, that's the reason he's the big boss man.
Well, people have already been noting, some of the early test audiences and screenings, about the staggering level of graphic violence in Saving Private Ryan, and I'm trying to tell people, you gotta see the movie anyhow. What do you tell people who might be scared off when they hear about all the violence?
Well, you know what? Yes, it is a violent film because what happened at that place at that time was very violent. But it is not gratuitous in any way, shape, or form. Well, I think by and large, movies have an awful lot of violence in them now, and it is of little consequence. Buses blow up, ships run into buildings, airplanes crash with people on board, and essentially all that you really see is a really glorious fireball in slow motion and a bunch of, you know, pieces of a fuselage scattering across in a cool cartwheel. And really all it's there to do is to look really neat and glamorous. None of our stuff is particularly glamorous, and it is of great consequence. We show both sides of the violence equation. We show the bullets being fired, which looks ad like bullets do when they are fired, but we also show the bullets piercing human flesh. It's not a pretty sight, but if you can survive that, if you can just bear witness to it for the first 26 minutes, it will place you in the midst of an emotional journey that I think is unlike anything I've ever seen in motion pictures.
It seems to me as though your first inclination is to screw around, be funny, and just kind of have a good time.
Under these circumstances, wouldn't you?
And some of it has to do with your work, and if you're talking about Splash, there were so many scenes where you kind of made them your own, or whether it's your appearances on Letterman, you know, they're bending the shafts, you know, that kind of
that
stuff.
That was me.
When you're on location doing a movie like this for months, shooting what is essentially a somber movie, what do you guys do to keep from having this build up?
Well, in all honesty, you pace it out in the course of as a professional, you know that there are moments when there are, in which it all counts, in which you have to be there 100%. You cannot lollygag, you cannot shirk your responsibilities as an actor, and you have to do the preparation so that when the camera is rolling, you're getting it. All the rest of that time, though, it's not unlike waiting for your time at bat. You stay loose, you joke around, you come and go, you have a sip of water. Ultimately, making a movie is a really fun thing. And this one was even more fun because it was outdoors. We didn't have to stay clean. It was with a great bunch of guys who we could take naps anytime we wanted to, almost just lay down in the grass and go to sleep. But what would always happen is that we'd always, I think, feel ourselves in that last 20 minutes or in that hour or so before we shot the big scene. Well, you know what? You wind it down. You find the moment and you get ready to go.
And as we said, we have seen your comedic side, and pretty much that's all you got to do for quite a while. At what point did you decide that this side of Tom Hanks had to come out?
Well, it's not like at any individual moment I said, I'm not doing comedies anymore. But after I made the baseball movie with Penny, League of Their Own, that was the first time I felt I had to play a grown-up man with experience behind him, with a lifetime behind him, was dealing with the nuts and bolts of trying to maintain a happy lifestyle. That I did say, I said, look, I'm not going to play wusses anymore. I'm not going to play these funny guys who have problems, you know, how come I don't have a girlfriend, or oh my gosh, I don't know, my house is falling apart, or stuff like that. Movies that I had enjoyed doing at the time, but I found myself to be an older man who was no longer interested in analyzing the themes of those earlier movies that I had made. So I just said, I'm not going to do them anymore. And that freed me up, I think, to entertain a lot of other possibilities.
And with all of this and the impact that you've made on the movies and the Oscars and everything, it just must seem like there must be a lot of pressure, too. It must be a case of people coming to you with their agendas and saying, you're one of the most powerful people, you got to do this. Don't you understand how important that is? How has your life and your responsibility, if you will, as an actor been altered because of all of this?
Well, you do get an awful lot of that, and you get burned maybe a couple of times, and you learn from that, oh, I'm not going to let that happen again. And you live up to you do your best to live up to social responsibilities that you have because of who you are. But at the same time, you realize that, I'm just a guy, I'm a movie star. I'm not a rocket scientist, and I don't make policy. The best I can do is help somebody garner some attention in regards to like a social function or something like that. And you do that to a degree. But ultimately, I mean, really, you're just starting off all over again with every job that you take. It's easy to say yes to something, either a job or some sort of function. It's easy to say yes if you believe in it and you think it's great. It's harder to say no because they make it seem so glamorous. They make you sound so important. They might be paying you all time such a money. They're going to make the movie anyway, and talented people are going to do it. But if you honestly don't believe in it, then you have to always police yourself and say, I'm sorry, I just don't get it.
And in what little time we have left here, there are stories that you've been hanging around St. Louis, that you want to do a story, that you want to do a movie, rather, about the first bridges built over the Mississippi River. Is that true?
I told somebody somewhere that I thought a great movie to be made. I think you can make a great movie about any subject matter, including the building of a bridge across the Mississippi.
And now they have you like staying in a downtown hotel in St. Louis checking out locations.
These people are sad, man. They got to get out a little more often because they're hallucinating.
Tom, I expect to see you on Oscar night. This is an amazing movie that you guys have made. I want to thank you for Saving Private Ryan.
Well, thank you very much.
I don't know anything about Ryan. It's just a name. But if finding him so he can go home, if that earns me the right to get back to my wife, well, then that's my mission.
Again, amidst all of the barbecues and pool openings and parades and things like that, take a moment out sometime over the next couple of days to remember the men and women who made all of this possible for us in 2021. All right, that's it. We're going to take a couple of days off. Back with you on Tuesday morning. Have a happy and safe holiday weekend. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.